Thanks, Cathy. I was sorry about the expectations that might have raised. But I'd just like to run you through an exciting journey that we've been on for the last couple of years. Starting first off with... With a quick context for you, Housing New South Wales manages about 130,000 tenancies plus other forms of housing assistance. We get about 100 new applicants each day across 65 offices across the state. When we started this seriously early in 2007, there were about 1.3 million client files on one legacy system, about 700,000 admin files on two legacy systems, and the normal plethora of access databases for all sorts of correspondence tracking. Now, the project objective, we jumped straight into this, we drew up the vision early on, was to implement digital records. That's where we wanted to be. And from where we were, it looked quite a long way off, but as you know, if you don't have a decent vision, you don't really pick up momentum to get there. We were going to go with new business to be digital from a selected date, i.e. No back scanning, and also no halfway house. There was discussion about do we keep these files for 12 months or so till we get more comfortable, but no, the decision was the hard copies would be disposed of in accordance with what was then GDA 24, of course. There were four phases that we set in the project. 1A, B and C, phase one, bring in the business classification scheme to replace the standard titling by admin unit or organisational unit or by project. Transfer admin file tracking from the two legacy systems to TRIM, and we introduced TRIM to ministerial tracking. We finished that December 2007, and we then gave everybody access to TRIM, the idea being that they'd become familiar, but more of that later. We then moved to client file tracking to TRIM from its one legacy system, and we introduced something we called item tracking, which is really correspondence tracking plus everything else. So it was more than correspondence tracking, so we knew it as item tracking, and that was spread across the organisation. Now that required people having access to complete actions and so forth, so there was some extra training involved there. And once again, I'll talk to you more about that later. So we finished all of that in the middle of 2008. It took us about 15 months. So now we could get to the interesting bit. Start with the digital records, client records first, and then what we thought of as the rest. Why client records first? That's a question. You know, when you've done these journeys a bit, it's interesting to look back and think about the decisions that had to be made. And this seemed like a pretty big place to go. We thought that we really needed something that was quarantinable, and most of the 1,500 people who access client files every day don't access admin files, so there wouldn't be the confusion about which system do I use for this one. It's a paper-driven process because, by definition, our clients are disadvantaged, so they don't submit things online or all of that. They fill in bits of paper and they submit them to our offices. And what flows out of that, of course, is movement around the place. If you get a phone call saying what's happening and you need to refer to the file, you have to say, I'll get back to you and I'll try and find the file. 10 emails a day saying, does anybody know where this file is? And of course it's our prime business process, so if you can start on your prime business process, that's where you're going to reap the business benefits. And the third one, we thought it was a fairly complex process, and we felt that if we addressed all the issues in it, the rest of it would be easier. So the business context for our client records. Now, the document lodgement that we're talking about here is not sort of here's the piece of paper to lodge. It's part of an integrated sort of business process. So if somebody comes into the office, you have a discussion with them, find out their needs, all this sort of stuff, and as part of that, the documents may be completed, checked and lodged. The 65 officers were receiving about 30,000 pages of documents, forms a day, so obviously scanning was a major requirement. The forms that come in from the clients are about half of what's on our client file, so they're not by any means all of it, but it's a pretty big part of it. And the documents vary: driver's licences, Medicare cards, all A4 and smaller, but single-sided and double-sided, handwritten, type-printed, you know, the whole combination. And the documents come in business bundles, so when you put in an application for something, it comes with a whole lot of supporting documents, proof of identity, letter from your doctor, that sort of stuff. So we had a look at solution options, and we proposed the minimum change option. So there was already a clear process for receiving this documentation, processing it, and what we suggested was that we would, at the point where the documents were filed, we would just change that and digitise them instead. Now, the business, to their credit, in my view, said, no, we're not having any of that. This is too good an opportunity. We don't want this paper in the organisation. We want you to go back and have a look at the feasibility of scanning at the boundary as it came to be known, i.e. we take it from the client, we check it, scan it, give it back to them. Yeah, interesting. I have to say I didn't think that was feasible when we started out. Just a little note here. We decided quite early on not to use OCR. An awful lot of what's on the forms that we get back is already printed on them when they go out, you know, instructions and filling your name here and all this sort of stuff. We all know OCR is not entirely reliable for handwriting, but the things are, it slows the process dramatically when you're scanning, increases bandwidth needs, which is, you know, fairly big consideration. And it really was not obvious to us that it facilitates the business process. We're a bit further along the road now. It occasionally comes up, but that decision hasn't really been shown to be a bad one at this stage. So, okay, let's go and have a look at scanning at the boundary. We set up a business process simulation using a housing register application, which was in our biggest document. It's about 32 pages printed on both sides. Comes with about, you know, up to a dozen other supporting documents, total of about 100 pages, and it's part of this client interaction, which takes at least 5 minutes, more often like 10. So how can we fit scanning into that process with the idea that you have to give the client, you want to give the client back the document? We identified three discrete steps in scanning. You physically scan it. As we were then going to give the document back to the client, to comply with GDA 24 as it then was, we had to be satisfied that the scanning was satisfactory. So we then had to check it on screen at some level of intensity. What we came down to was a fairly cursory check. Is the right number of pages in there? Let's have a look at one or two with handwriting on them. And then what we referred to as registration, i.e. checking it into TRIM. Now that you don't have to do when the client's there, and that's actually the timely or time-consuming part of the process. Do you do it online or do you do it in the back office? Okay, the decision was that we would do that either after the client had left or in the back office physically. Somebody else would do it or you would do it later. But the scanner requirement we got out of all of this was small footprint. Scan this 32-page double-sided document in less than a minute. It's got to be able to scan driver's licences and all these funny other odds and sods. And so we went out to the industry and said, look, here's a spec. What can you provide for us? And what we ended up with was a model from Canon, a DR2580C. I was going to bring it in and show it to you, but I thought it was probably not really the benefit. But I don't know if any of you are familiar with them. They have a footprint that's about A4 size. They scan on both sides at once in one pass. They're very quiet. And they scan 25 sheets of paper a minute, so 32 pages, 16 sheets in 40 seconds. they scan driver's licences, they won't scan passports, but they scan these hard cards, they have a straight through pass for that. We kind of got that in, that seemed to do the job. We then installed them in several offices to do what was called by the business a pressure test, i.e., you know, we have a big queue at the door, is this going to make the queue longer? But the outcome was people were pleasantly surprised, and one of the staff we had involved, I remember her saying, look, scanning's not an issue. And you know, so that was a pretty big advance. I mean, we of course, the business people made all these decisions, and we emphasised that to them, you know, this isn't being imposed on you. And they came on this journey with us, starting from, we don't have anybody to do that work, to what's the problem? So scan and quality check on the spot, register after the client is gone, as I said to you. So we're able to go back to the business and say, look, this is feasible. These scanners are about $900 each, government price, so not expensive. The commercial scanners rated about 1,000 scans a day. I think 200,000 scans before they're seen as needing major work. So how many scanners do we need? Well, that really came down to where we fitted in the business process. So if you're sitting with a client interviewing them, you know, it can be emotional or concerning at times, so you don't want somebody knocking on the door saying, excuse me, I just need to scan something. So it really didn't come down, I guess what I'm saying is, to the volume of paper we needed to scan. It was more how to fit it in. And what we came up with, the number of scanners, I think, was about 165 from memory. And the capacity wasn't critical. They were rated at 1,000 scans a day, and they're doing about 200. So that was the model. How did we implement this? Well, there's four housing services divisions in the organisation, and we set up an implementation group in each division to own the change locally, to do a lot of the communicating, to nominate subject matter experts for workshops and so forth. The business staff, as I said earlier, were the owners of decisions on process. We used the train-the-trainer approach. Now, this wasn't our original proposal, but it's what the regions, the divisions came back and said they wanted to do. So we intensively trained about 1 in 5 of the people we needed to use the system. So each one was responsible for going back and training 4. We trained in the use of TRIM as a procedure. You know, you've got a business process, there was an explicit decision made that somebody else is responsible for that. Here's where you use TRIM in it, and this is how you do it. We then had the preparation before go live. You know, the old term, put the papers last on the list. You're busy doing a piece of business. A document comes in from another office, please put this on the file, and that goes to the bottom of your heap and stays there forever. So we then wanted to pick up all of those pieces of paper and put them on the appropriate file so we could sort of close off the files. Massive job. People found stuff that was years old, let alone months old, but you know, I guess that was one of the benefits of sort of doing this process and getting this tidying up. We had the system close the latest part of all of these active client files and create a new digital part. And we started the numbering from a new point in the series so that you could look at the record in TRIM and know that that's a digital. There's no hard copy bits that didn't exist before we went live. Lessons learned. Well, the culture change is huge, we all know that, but it's actually bigger than that. It's very significant, and yeah, this interesting, you know, the project, I think, always suffered from the branding, and I'd suggest that to you quite strongly. It was a records project, and that's what the people out in the back office do. Not us, we don't do records, but the clerics do records. So, of course, what we were doing here with this digital client record project, the staff had a business system that they used to manage clients. they had files that had all the documents on, so the two were complementary, and together they managed the clients with them. We got rid of the files and they've now got two business systems to manage clients. So everybody is involved in managing clients. It's just right up and down the organisation. And now trim users by necessity. So that was a pretty major part of the change. Look, you're going to have to use this. Apart from the obvious one that it's now digital. Now, I haven't mentioned paperless in any of this, and we deliberately don't. I think it's a devalued term. And also, introducing digital records, the benefits of having them are enormous. If you can go paperless or use less paper, that's actually a benefit you can harvest, but it's not something you aim for. And early in the discussions with the client service staff, one of the senior people made the comment, look, even if we still had to keep hard copy file, having digital records would be such a leap forward for us. It'd be worth doing anyway. So, yeah, the benefits in having the digital records, you know, the obvious one, everybody can access it once you get on the phone and find someone's information. You don't lose it, it's auditable, etc., etc., etc. Integrate trim into the business process and train that way. Now, I mentioned earlier that we said, you know, there's the business process that belongs to somebody else, here's the trim procedure. One of the significant things that became apparent pretty early was, okay, that's fine, we scan it in, we register it. Using it in the business process. Now, we don't use workflow in trim because at an early stage when we were looking at ministerials, we discovered that just about every workflow was unique. And as you know, when you're setting up workflows, you can't have that. So we use action tracking, which is much less controllable and means people have to go and look for things, but it works. And it's very good. So we taught people how to action track, but, okay, to whom do I action track it for how long? How does that person and that person's managers know what's going on? What sort of searching do they do to monitor what's happening? All of those things that a kind of end-to-end, I suppose. So you used to work with paper and you had a process, you looked in your in-tray. Now you're working with trim, with digital records. There's a new process around all of that. That's what we are now looking at, going back and I guess integrating and teaching the people. That was came out fairly quickly as an important oversight, but it wasn't so much an oversight, I suppose. It was considered and explicitly left out. So the organisation was certainly involved and looked at that and was happy to agree that no, we should have done it a different way. Train all the users. I said we used the train the trainer approach. Maybe it was the branding, I don't know, but we asked for these people to be nominated and, you know, you want them to be keen and expert and all that stuff. You'd go to meetings and say, well, who's your nominated experts? And somebody would say, oh, you and you. And people would say, oh, nobody mentioned it to me, sort of thing. So it turned out to be not a good model, really, and people expected more hand-holding than that. They wanted direct kind of training. Backscanning, we explicitly, as I said, left it out because it was such a huge task. But it's actually important, we find. The view now is that it's an important part of the culture change. We've just co-located two of our offices. Burwood and Broadway have moved to, part of Broadway moved into Sussex Street and the rest of it moved to Burwood. We've initiated a backscanning process basically to take all of their old hard copy records out of those offices and have all the stuff backscanned. It's got to be outsourced. You can't do it internally. To backscan one of these files probably takes about 50 minutes, of which 40 minutes is preparation, and pull out the staples, arrange the paper, then you scan it, then you put it all back together again. And the quality is nothing like what you can get if you get it done outside. The one problem with that is, of course, it costs money. Once people come on board, they love digital records. There's so much, so frequently, so often with changes, they're not as big as people think, and once they get there, they think, why didn't I do this earlier, and what did I used to do before? So, just I mentioned our item tracking system, and we introduced that in parallel, and we thought it was a good idea because we thought, you know, ministerials and briefing notes flow through an organisation, and they involve people in doing things. Action officers have to write something and save it and send it on. And we thought this is a good way of kind of, you know, drawing everybody in. But I don't know that we'd do it that way if we were doing it again. It just turned out to be a major thorn in our sides, and still is, because people said, well, you haven't given us a detailed business process, you haven't trained us enough, you know, we need some help here. So it's just been a drain on resources, maybe. I mean, it's been useful, and as always, many people have jumped on and said, this is great, let's use it. So, you know, whether we'd be better just to have gone with all digital records and said, right, oh, now this is how you track things. I don't know, but finish off with a few statistics. Digital client records went live on the 15th of June last year. There's about 1,500 regular users of client records out of the 3,000. We're creating about 5,000 documents a day, and the storage is going up by about 7 gig a week. Last few weeks we've added about 100 gig in outsourced back scanning, and the organisation in the, what is it now, 8 months, 7 months, 8 months, already has over 1 million fewer pieces of paper that it has to manage. That's lots and lots of reams. It's an interesting number, but yeah, you know, the stuff doesn't come in anymore. And finally, GDA 36 talks about retention time, and I've put a little in quotes there, our retention time's measured in seconds, and I can't claim to be the author of that. It was at a meeting we had with Cassie and Kath, when we were talking about the whole process and walking them through it, one of them made that comment about, well, when we wrote the General Disposal Authority about retaining things for a period of time, we didn't think of measuring it in seconds. So it's been an exciting journey for us, and I think we've laid a pretty good framework for housing, and now we're continuing to finish off the place, and we'll have that done by early next year. That's the current schedule. And that's all I've got to say, except for questions, so thank you.